NPR's business news starts with Europe and a hefty fine for Microsoft. It's not just hefty, it's historic. Europe's antitrust regulators have fined the U.S. software giant a record $1.4 billion for defying an antitrust ruling. In 2004, Europe ruled that Microsoft had abused its market dominance by withholding information other companies needed to make their products work smoothly with Microsoft's. Regulators say Microsoft continued to charge unfairly high royalty fees. They've already slapped Microsoft with previous fines. Adding today's, Microsoft will have had to pay about $2.5 billion to Europe's antitrust regulators.
This is Day to Day. I'm Madeline Brand. If you want to go online and find the love of your life, beware people who want to sweet-talk you out of your money. They're known as sweetheart swindles, and they've become so pervasive that the National Consumers League has put them on its list of top 10 scams. Here to discuss how to avoid losing your heart with your money is Michelle Singletary, personal finance contributor for Day to Day. Welcome to the program.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
So this is one of the top 10 scams. How much money are we talking about?
Well, the National Consumers League estimates that victims are losing about $3,000 a year per person. Now, of course, that means people are losing much more than that in this type of scam.
So this kind of sounds like a scam as old as the ages. Why do people keep falling for it?
I've seen some of the conversations. Some people have sent me the online conversations that they've had. And, you know, they say things like, oh, my dear, my honey, you know, you're so nice. I've been waiting for someone like you. And they just let their guard down. I mean, it's, you know, people do the craziest things when they're searching for love.
I think there's some scientific study that said that when you're in the first beginnings of love, you lose your critical faculties, your critical judgment.
Right. You lose your common sense. You lose your mind, you know.
Yeah, you're just head over heels.
And it's true. And, you know, lots of these people, and it's just not women, it's women and men, you know, are well-educated and in their jobs doing really well. But there's something about when you factor in this love thing or this quest for affection. And the stories are very compelling. And, you know, it may start off with just a couple $100s. So it doesn't, you know, red flags don't go off because they're not saying send me $10,000 right away. I talked to a woman in particular who sent almost $35,000.
Oh,
we don't even know if it was a man, but who said that he was an engineer working in Nigeria.
Oh, well. There's a giveaway.
A lot of email scams, a lot of scams come out of Nigeria. And in this case, she actually had to take out a home equity loan because she was getting advances on her credit cards to send to this gentleman who, the way he snared her in and said, you know, that he had a son, I think it was an 11-year-old son, who needed some medical help and he didn't have insurance to cover it. And she was a nurse and he was using medical terms that sounded right. And some things she checked out, like the name of the hospital and things like that. And so she just got trapped in this and sent, you know, thousands of dollars to this fictitious person.
Oh, very tragic. But it sounds very sophisticated, this scam. How can you tell if the person you're talking to online, the love of your life, is actually scamming you?
Well, for one thing, if they right away say they're in love or they express all these feelings and you've only been talking to them for a couple months, you've never met them. If they start asking for money, if they ask for money, period, that is the red flag. You need to stop communication right there because the chances are that almost 99.9%, it's a scam.
Thanks, Michelle.
You're welcome.
I'm now going to go offline.
Find love the old-fashioned way. Ask your mama to hook you up. No.
Michelle Singletary is our regular expert on personal finance, and she writes the nationally syndicated column, The Color of Money.
A simpler sound is having a profound effect in Afghanistan. That's a cell phone. Nothing special in America, but it's becoming more popular in a country that had very few reliable communication lines before 2001. Many Afghans now rely on cell phones, as do Taliban militants. We were reminded of that change this week when a Taliban spokesman complained that foreign troops were tracking the Taliban using cell phone signals. The spokesman threatened to blow up cell towers if companies didn't shut off service at night. The British author Rory Stewart has an idea what cell phones mean for this country. He lives in Kabul, where we reached him on a cell phone. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
How isolated was Afghanistan a few years ago?
I remember when I first entered the country at the end of 2001 that in Herat, the only way you could make a call was by going to a small shack in the street where somebody had a stolen satellite telephone and they'd charge you $3 for a call out. We're now in a situation in which I'm running a non-profit in Kabul, and of my 350 staff, I think 250 of them have mobile telephones.
And how much has that changed life in the country?
I can now sit in a car driving through Kabul and get messages on a BlackBerry. It's also changed in unexpected ways. The Taliban have been using mobile telephones in Helmand as a way of passing messages to coordinate attacks against British troops. And the British troops have been reluctant to shut down the mobile telephone communications because it would irritate the local population. Mobile telephones have become a very powerful symbol, both of the rapid change and advance in Afghanistan, and also the strange ways in which insurgency is developing.
Now, are there a number of companies competing for Afghans' business and investing in cell phone networks?
There are indeed. The first mobile telephone company, called Roshan, has well over 1 million customers and was launched with charitable money. But there are now at least four other companies competing. And you can see now mobile telephone masts all over the country. I was up in the very far north in a very remote region and was able to walk up to the top of the mountain because I was following a track which had been carved out to create a mobile telephone antenna.
Now, when we talk about the way this has changed the country, I recall in the days immediately after September 11, 2001, when one of our correspondents, an NPR correspondent, Ann Gerrels, made it to a remote corner of Afghanistan, got on a satellite telephone with one of our anchors, and began a report by saying, "I'm about as far away from you as I could possibly get." Now, Afghanistan is still far away on the map, but are there ways that it is closer to the rest of the world now because of that communication?
Yes. There's now a situation in the country where perhaps 4 or 5 million young Afghans have returned from being refugees in Pakistan and Iran. They've come in with many more modern attitudes. The mobile telephone network is probably the biggest success story in the country. And this means that a country which was once probably one of the most remote and isolated places on earth is suddenly encountering many of the challenges of the modern world.
Such as?
Well, they're learning much more about what happens in the United States or in Japan, and that, of course, breeds a lot of disappointment and frustrated expectation. It also means they're getting in touch with much wider political ideologies. Young Afghans are now much more in touch with what Muslims are doing in other parts of the world. But the positive consequences are in terms of trade. Afghanistan's economic future will really depend on it being able to open up to its neighbors and to benefit from very rapidly growing economies alongside it. And mobile telephones and road networks and all forms of communication are going to be key to that.
Rory Stewart is a former British diplomat and author of The Places in Between, about traveling across Afghanistan. He's on a cell phone in Kabul. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
NPR's business news starts with video game giants racing to consolidate. Some of them are, anyway. Video games raked in more than $8.5 billion in U.S. sales last year. And the company Electronic Arts wants to stay leader of the fast-growing industry, so it is trying to buy a big rival, Take-Two. That's the company behind the popular game Grand Theft Auto. Electronic Arts is offering $2 billion. But on Friday, Take-Two said, forget about it. Electronic Arts is now launching a hostile bid. It's going straight to Take-Two shareholders, hoping they'll overrule the board. Maybe make a video game out of takeovers.
This is Day to Day. I'm Madeline Brand. In the world of video games, the letters M and A are usually associated with ratings.
Rated M for mature.
And A stands for adult. Video games rated M or A are supposed to mean N and O, as in no, for young gamers. This weekend, the letters M and A took on a different meaning, as in mergers and acquisitions. Electronic Arts, they're the people behind the hugely successful Madden football games, they made a bid to acquire Take-Two Entertainment. Take-Two is famous for the bloody Grand Theft Auto series.
Grand Theft Auto, rated M for mature.
And someone who didn't need to be reminded of that, the chief executive of Electronic Arts. It already dominates the sports gaming world and the Madden series, which is rated E for everyone. On a conference call this morning, EA's chief said this deal would give his company the best M-rated content, too. This is all part of a battle to be the world's biggest video game company. EA is trying to stop a company called Activision, which recently shelled out $18 billion to acquire another video game maker. So, as far as this merger is concerned, Take-Two has rejected EA's takeover offer, even though EA is offering 50% more than the current share price. And part of the reason for that, April 29th is the debut of Grand Theft Auto 4.
Grand Theft Auto, rated M for mature.
Okay, we get it. Anyway, the latest Grand Theft Auto is expected to be one of the biggest video game hits of the year, which could send Take-Two's stock price soaring.
Not many Pakistani students have access to the internet, but those who do may have been disappointed on Sunday to discover they could not get onto the most important site to many, YouTube. The video clip service is one of the most widely viewed sites by teenagers, even in Pakistan, but yesterday Pakistani officials banned access to it. They told Pakistan's internet service providers to block the site because of videos the government deems offensive to Islam. The Pakistani Telecommunication Authority did have a solution for frustrated Pakistani video addicts, though. It suggested that Pakistanis write to YouTube and demand that it remove the objectionable material, which was unnamed.